Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. It's the Mag Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week's Macintosh news, and I've got a great panel. Starting off, Chris Forsman. How you doing, pal?
Woohoo!
Writer at Ars Technica, extraordinaire. Reviewer of iTunes 11.
Generally, just good look.
And he's done some work this week.
Some. A smidge.
Just a little. Yeah, not much. Next to him, we've got Carl Swagger, proud owner of an iPhone 5. A flimsy shell.
A wonderful shell.
He's already tweeted out that it feels light and flimsy.
What?
I did not.
Is it as light and flimsy as the Galaxy S3?
No, the Galaxy S3 is a piece of crap.
Okay, so it's still light and flimsy, but not as light and flimsy.
It is much lighter. I will say that it doesn't feel as solid, I would say, as the 4 or the 4S, because I only had the 4.
But definitely not.
I like it. And you don't really notice that screen size until you start using it. I like it.
Guys, let's be fair. The Galaxy S3 is a giant piece of crap.
Okay, it is a big piece of crap. Yeah, all right.
Fair. Amen.
Next to Kyle, we've got the gorgeous and wonderfully lovely Kelly from Portland.
Are you just worried I'm going to pick another fight with you this week?
Oh, man, last week.
Please do.
Bing, bing. She was up and fighting. How you doing, girl?
Not bad.
Excellent.
Busy this week, so we'll talk about it, I'm sure.
Oh, good. Right, okay. And last in the main ring around the outside... fighting in the blue corner, it's Alex G. Fox standing in for Will Green, who for no apparent reason is not here. Considering it's his party tomorrow night, you'd have thought the bugger would have put an appearance in. But thank you, Alex, for stepping in at the last moment. I'm aware I haven't forwarded you the doc, but being as there's no news, I'm sure you'll wing it.
I make it up as I go along, even when you send me it, so what's the difference?
I shall do it now, mate. While we talk to DHM. How you doing, pal?
Ta-da. In the middle, am I again?
She's let you have the curtain room again.
And she's here.
And she's still there.
Yeah, she's still here.
Better tell her
this
to be...
This is a joint podcast with one silent partner.
That'll be you, then.
Oh, bad luck, mate.
You can all come over here and have a go if you want. I'm sure she'll take you all on.
I've just got a text from Will Green saying I could do it in about an hour.
Oh.
That's very well.
I could do it in about an hour. Well, that's not really going to help, Greeny.
Yeah, can I come back in an hour? Because we got to do it right now. Okay.
Thanks, Anil, mate. But he's priceless. The week in Mac News.
Yeah, that sums it up. Thank you very much.
Google Maps.
Are you using the
IoT app
there?
We're going to be saved because Google Maps is back. The Google Maps app for iOS was released. There are some warnings flying around in Australia because apparently it takes you down a few wrong roads near to the shipwreck coast. And some people actually followed Apple Maps this week into the wilderness and were the worse for wear of the result of it. Has everyone downloaded the Google Maps app?
I have.
iPhone only, though, isn't it?
Free.
iPhone only?
Yeah. I haven't released the iPad version yet.
Oh.
No,
yeah,
there's
no iPad. It's just iPhone.
Just iPhone. So have
it's coming. They're working on it.
That's good to know. What's the review?
It's much good. Like it used to be.
I just say, was it just back to what it was?
It's like it was 3 weeks ago.
Normal service will be resumed.
I'm really glad it's back, I've got to be honest. I have been late for about 4 things in the last month, and all of them is because of... There's something to do with Apple Maps and the centre of London. So you start walking down the street, and you've got that funny sort of radar-y thing that says you're moving north or whatever. You know the thing that keeps you walking in the same direction as your phone is pointed? And then you get sort of 200 yards down the road, and the whole thing switches around. And you, like, do the figure of eight thing to try and check whether you're right or wrong.
Right.
And then you carry on, because it says you're definitely right. And then 20 minutes later, you realise that you're about 3 miles further away than you started. And then you jump in a cab because you can't be bothered anymore. I went to meet the guys the other night. Again, I was late because of, I thought, I know roughly where it is, but I'm going to give it one more go. I ended up jumping in a cab to go back to where I started because I was only about 200 yards away when I started using the maps. So roll on Google.
Right. So that review's positive then. DHM?
Same, is it? Because it does turn by turn. The stuff that they wouldn't give Apple when Apple wanted it to be part of the OS is now available directly from Google on the app.
And?
Well, that's good. I mean, it's a plus thing.
It also does crowdsourcing, doesn't it? For
so yeah, I mean, it's basically turn by turn via Apple Maps and turn by turn on Google Maps. So they're pretty much feature for feature competitors. And I think, I mean, looking at the maps on it, Google's got it all over Apple on the actual quality of the map on the screen. But I must say that I haven't tried the turn by turn, and the Apple turn by turn hasn't steered me wrong at all.
I mean, what surprised me was the fact that, one of the standard development things is terms is that you can't duplicate core functionality of the existing system. So if Apple's got its own map system, surely a mapping application is a duplication of core system. And you'd have thought with their history of Google, they might have refused it, but it's gone through dead easy. I know they've got Waze and all that kind of stuff, but they're not really a maps application. They're more of a navigation application, as badged. So I there was a little bit of me was surprised, not for long, I have to say, but... Take the first exit onto Swindon Road
A429. Thanks, DHM. The voice is... I have to be fair, and this is true, there's the... I'm trying to remember the other Google app that has a voice built in. The Google Now or Google Voice Search or whatever. But the voice does sound nicer than Siri, I have to be honest.
Well, you get the American Siri, we get the British Siri, so...
You do get the superior Siri.
Is John Briggs, mate, and John Briggs is a dude. Follows me on Twitter. I follow him. We have a hug bromance once in a while.
Are you going to go the brodeo?
Maybe.
Have a bro down?
So why isn't it Stephen Fry?
Yeah. Is he like the patron saint of nerds over there or something?
Pretty much, but he didn't do the voices, so I think that's probably why he's not Siri.
Probably he should totally be Siri.
Well, Siri was the guy, the thing behind Siri, the guy that recorded it here, recorded it 3 years before Apple ever got hold of it for the company that originally built the system that Apple moved on and developed Siri with. So it wasn't like he recorded it for Apple. He recorded it for some very small company that maybe one day would sell it on to be something useful. So Stephen Fry isn't the sort of guy that you can say, you know, do you want to do this? Because of Monday, we might actually be able to do something with it. You know, maybe he'd record it now, but not then.
He's pretty expensive if you do that kind of thing, you have to say.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's worth every penny.
Do you not have the option over there? I mean, you can't change it to US or anything like that.
You can change the voices.
Oh, okay.
I want it to be a more honest voice on the map. You know, like when you miss a turn, instead of sort of saying, you know, in 200 yards, trees, please make a U-turn, I want it to go, oh, for bloody hell's sake, what do you think you're doing? Told you to turn left there. I'm not doing this anymore. You can read the bloody map yourself. Because that's more honest. That's more like we all know we love map reading when you've got someone else giving you directions. Or was that just me? Sorry. I'm giving too much away again.
Excuse me. My question would be, is there anything in Google Maps that trumps Apple Maps, or is there anything in Apple Maps that trumps Google Maps? What about the 3D thing?
I was going to say, I like the 3D thing when it actually works in Apple's Maps. What trumps Google's Maps with Apple's Maps is Google Maps works.
That's a very good point.
But also, that 3D
thing is beautiful, but you can't use it while you're traveling because, you know, you use up your data bandwidth within about 5 minutes of getting in the car. And also the street view on Google Maps, when you're walking, that is, the street view on Google Maps gives you a much more useful representation when you're sort of looking around to find somewhere. Whereas that 3D over the head thing is great if you're in a helicopter. It's not really the view you get when you're actually standing there trying to work out what door the map is showing you. I think Ewan is dying quietly.
I'm sorry, everyone.
Someone is, yeah.
I've got that bloody cough. I've got it off briny, and it's I'm not that bad. It's just you get that little tickle that comes and just will not go away. Good God.
Yeah. It's like you want to reach back there and scratch it.
Wait a minute. I'll start a fire and then I'll go and get a drink while you lot are beating the crap out of each other.
Kelly, off you go.
Verbally.
So Google Maps is as good as Google Maps is because when it first started, it sucked. It sucked out loud. It sucked hard. And that's...
Or we're just like, I'll just use MapQuest.
I can continue if you'd like. But it was really bad. And so part of the reason that Google Maps looks the way it does is because it's had such a head start on people going, wrong, wrong, wrong. Yeah. And as soon as you get enough people who are willing to crowdsource data as a matter of course, then the maps are going to improve. So part of the reason that Google is as far ahead as they are is because of the way that the maps are set up. And apples are new. And so, yeah, right now it's very possible that Google has an advantage. But as people start correcting maps and as maps starts to get significant updates to it, I think it's going to end up being a Coke versus Pepsi kind of a debate.
Yeah, but surely if Google, I mean, Apple obviously knew this. Apple knew what you've just said. And being as it's correct, I imagine they knew that quite well. But if, for instance, you know, they knew this, then why release something that you know is completely inferior to somebody that's already been through the teething problems? Why not, you know, keep it there, keep it going? You know, the fact is, if Google Maps is right, I mean, it's not beyond the wit of man to sort of go, okay, well, let's test our maps against Google Maps in simulation. You know, because if you know Google Maps has had all this stuff and it's been tested, then simulate it. All right, you could probably get some computer.
You'd automate that process. You'd just test one
against
the other.
Yeah, you could get some computer to run them concurrent, you know, run them together. And then when they differ, you go, hold on, one of them's wrong. What should we do about it? The whole thing stinks of somebody jumping the gun, and that somebody doesn't appear to be working with Apple anymore.
Right. Those guys got fired.
It's logistically just such a stupid thing to do. Because one of the things Apple did do, and, you know, this is my criticism of them at the moment, is they would never have released something that was a pile of crap. You know, I mean, they did by accident, but it seems like they were just, you know what, so what? It doesn't matter. It was almost like the ego was being cashed at that point. It didn't matter. We want maps, we're going to send it out. I don't think that really was something the top guys were dealing with. I think there was some people dealing with it who just told the top guys it worked, and when quite clearly it didn't. And, you know...
Yeah, they had a deadline to meet, and if they didn't meet the deadline, there was going to be trouble, so yeah, let's just say
so they
done.
Just lied, you know, basically. And that's a shame. But, you know... One of the beauties about Apple is it is a polished product. Everything they've done was polished, and you could sort of rely on that. And the legacy of Maps is going to be, once you've made that mistake and that mistake's out there, it's always going to be referred back to. You know, whenever Apple do say something in a keynote about how great they are and how crap someone else is, which is basically what their keynotes tend to be, people, whether the fanboys like it or not, people are going to refer to Maps, and they're going to go, hold on a minute, pop calling a kettle black. So that, I think, is a bigger mistake than just the Maps being rubbish at the time. It's the fact that they let something get through their system, and they have lost that, if you like, that 100% record. Once you've lost it. You can't regain it.
Totally agree with Alex here, I have to say, says Tone in the chat room.
Thanks, Tone. Money in the post.
Point well made. DHM is putting in fantasy routes, obviously, because they're coming out with, if you want to go to Buckers or Return, turn at the end of the road and turn left. Very good. So has Google Maps put anything in that it deliberate? Let's take, forget turn by turn, but is the Maps functionality better than when it was in as the core functionality of iOS? Were they deliberately hobbling Apple or something, maybe? Or is it all just the same?
Well, what's really interesting here is that the map tiles that Google served to Apple's Maps app before were two-dimensional raster graphics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever had to try to use Google Maps on 3G, you know, especially if your connection gets very dodgy, you know, those tiles take forever to load. And So on Android, Google had started serving vector-based tiles. So it's, you know, it's just a little tile that says, like, here's the road, it's this long, it's this direction, whatever. And the data is much more efficient to transmit. And when you zoom in or zoom out, you don't have to retransmit that data. It just redraws it using the vector information. And Google also, like, they don't allow their maps data to be used for turn-by-turn navigation. There's some other limitations and things like that. So Google, or, you know, Apple decided, we want to be able to do this. Google's not going to give it to us, so, you know, let's roll our own. And that's what they did. Then what's really interesting is after they did that and there were all these issues, Google comes back, makes its own iOS app that uses vector tiles. It has turn-by-turn navigation. You know, it has voice annotations. All these, you know, all some of these features that it wasn't going to let Apple have. And to put even, you know, an extra bow on top of that, now they're offering, you know, a API for iOS developers to use all this improved vector data and everything else within their own app, so they can actually replace Apple's built-in MapKit APIs with this Google Map APIs, and, you know, essentially get kind of the same thing. So it's this really bizarre situation, because, you know, Google's like, you can't have it, or maybe they were going to try to charge Apple extra and they didn't want to pay it, whatever. And now they're basically just giving it to all iOS developers. It's strange. Why were they holding back so long when, you know, Apple's willing to license it?
Well, because Apple probably weren't willing to pay exactly what they wanted. There was yeah. probably some huge money. Negotiations yeah. taking place over the money, to the point
But now Google's giving it away for free. That's the thing I don't understand. Now Google's giving away for free.
Yeah, but that's different. I mean, if a company comes to me and says, we want to buy one of your pictures, I sell it to them. If they come and say, we want to buy one of your pictures, actually, we want it for free, I go, well, get stuffed. Pay me for it. And then if someone comes along and says, oh, I really like that picture. Okay, well, I took that 5 years ago. I never used it for anything. Have it. I'd give them a copy of it so that they could make a print themselves, or I'd make a print for them and give it to them. That's the point I would make. It's like, you know, they're giving us, the consumer, that thing rather than giving the corporation that thing.
But it's not just at Google's own app. They're giving it to any iOS developer to use in their own app.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, what Google have benefited out of this is Google's whole business ethos is the wrong word. What they want the public to believe, I don't know how true or not it is they want us to believe that they are the givers of free stuff to all of us. And, you know, what they've gained out of this is a massive piece of very good publicity. You know, and that's got to be worth more than any money that Apple would throw at them extra or not extra. I mean, I was just playing with the Google thing in front of me. The actual app looks a lot prettier now. It looks a lot
slicker. It does look sharper, yeah.
The whole thing looks, in a funny way, it looks more Apple than the old one ever did, though. So it's like, I think both sides, by the look of the way this is acting now, both sides were probably trying to tie each other's hands a bit. You know, Apple wanted something, but they didn't want Google to get too much out of it. Google wanted something, but didn't want Apple to get too much out of it. Mm. What's happened now, I think the end user has got everything out of it. You've got two, if you like, free in inverted commas, apart from the fact that you've got to buy a system that runs iOS. You've got two free systems, both trying to give us something extra for nothing. So this whole debacle, at the end of it, we've all benefited. And just to add, that Nokia thing, as much as I really want Nokia to do well, it's hateful. I hate it.
There's an article this week in Apple Insider that quotes Larry Page as saying that the rivalries between Apple, Amazon and Google do nothing more than hurt users. And that's exemplified by that whole conversation that we've just had and what Alex has just said. You know, when the knife and the plate meet, the only thing that gets cut is the meat. So it's true.
I don't think that we've had the users are particularly, I mean, short term, a little bit of pain, but I think the Google Maps app that's on the phone now is way better than it would have been if the whole thing hadn't kicked off how it kicked off. I think that, you know, now looking at it, all the stuff that the integration with Street View, you know, drop a pin, see what, you know, have a quick look around, et cetera, stuff that we were never going to get, which we now do have. And competition and Apple are going to have to, you know, there's an app, a mapping app that stamps all over their app, which is free to download onto the phone, they're going to have to make sure that they up their game as well. I don't think Larry Page is quite... I think that it's a bit disingenuous. I think that competition generally tends to be for the good of people in the longer term, although there's obviously some uphills and some downhills.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing to think as well with the statement that you made, Chris, is there's no such thing as a free lunch. And if they've given away the maps data, I'm sure there's got to be something in the data that's given that reports an anonymous location of user, etc., because that's what Google wants.
Absolutely. Yeah, we did an article, or you know, our write-up yesterday of kind of a review of the app. When you first use it, it's like, do you want to send information to Google? Automatically, it's checked yes, of course.
Mm.
And so, by default, a lot of people are going to agree to that.
But the developers' apps.
You can turn it off too. You can go into the app, turn it off, but you have to like dig into like so many setting options that most people are never even going to find it.
But that's what I'm saying is that you won't get that option in the developers app that's using the API, because the API will automatically have that switched on for anonymous sourcing. You won't have an option to turn off your location. If you buy this app, if you use our data, you by default are telling us that we know where you are. Only in our own app are we going to give you that ability to switch off. I don't know that. That just seems logical.
It's a fantastic...
That's very possible. You're right.
It's a fantastic free app, but the old adage is always the same, isn't it? If you can't work out what the product is you.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Although the product is a great set of maps and apps and turn-by-turn navigation.
But if you are not paying, you are not the customer.
Yeah, that's the point.
Mm. Well, I think we all wouldn't be talking about this now had Apple not screwed up. The app wouldn't even be in the store. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is that the reason why it's there is because Apple at least admitted that they screwed up. And yeah, I guess it's... I have to say, though, Apple Maps is getting better. It is getting a lot better. I used it actually today, and it was perfectly fine. So, and that's over here on the other side of the world. So it's a choice, at least now. You can do the Apple Maps, or you can give a DNA sample and a stool sample to Google and use theirs.
I got a stool sample for you.
He's actually pretty negative for a man who's just got himself a brand new iPhone 5 for the first time. Mm-hmm. Bah humbug.
Yeah.
Talk us through that phone, dude. Come on, give us your review. How is it?
Oh, it's a good phone. Is it anything spectacular? No. It's the next Apple iPhone. I got the white, wanted something different. I do have to say it does look really, really good. After seeing it out of the box. And the screen isn't really noticeable until you start using it. Then you start realizing, yeah, that real estate, that little bit of extra real estate is nice. The speed of it is wonderful. It is fast. Well, obviously, it's faster than the 4, which is what I'm coming from. I've played also with a 4S while I was waiting around trying to get this phone, which took 4 hours today. And the 4S, and I would say this, are roughly about the same as far as performance goes. This looked a little bit faster, internet browsing-wise. That's about, honestly, what I really noticed. The camera, I think, maybe a tad bit better on this, even though they're the same camera. I don't know if it has something to do with this lens that's on the back of this or what. My personal preference, if you're going from a 4 or below, upgrade. It's worth it. If you're on a 4S right now, stay where you're at and wait for the 5S here in probably, you know, 3 or 4 weeks.
I mean, if you're not a regular listener to the show because you've come over since the TNT thing that we did, to point out, Kyle is an American, but he's not living in America. So the Philippines only got this today. This is hot off the press in the Philippines, which is where Kyle is based.
What's some 20 China? Philippines, there's 22 different countries, I think.
Yeah, something like 22, or 33 or something like that. Yeah, we got it today. And
I think Uzbekistan got it today, too. So.
Yeah, some really interesting places.
You're right up there with Uzbekistan, Kyle.
Yeah.
Jolly good.
What does interest me is when Apple do these phase-out things, and we were talking on the media show, it must have been last weekend, the fact that iTunes Store has been opened up in various other parts of the world as well. It sort of coincides with similar countries that have just got the new iPhone. And I was querying, and I was going to write into you, but I'm on it now. Most of the functionality of, say, an iPhone, not most, but other than the phone part, so much of the functionality is to have the applications that come through the store, and the music and the film and all the things that you sort of want to put on it that are special have to come through the store. And I was just wondering, in all the countries that didn't have access to the iTunes store until last week, what functionality did they have with their iPhones? Was their stuff missing? Were they unable to buy music, for instance? Because I know I can't go and sign into a US iTunes store and buy things through the US because I need a US bank account and things like that. So where did the people that only just got an iTunes store last week, where did they get the functionality for their device? I was just a bit confused and no one was able to give me the answer.
Well, they would have been able
Cydia.
No, but they would have been able, they would have access to iTunes software that would have done syncing. Whether they got access to the store or not is a different question.
Yeah.
Right.
But,
I mean, for instance, the App Store, is that not based geographically as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
So where did they get the apps for their devices?
Just the built-in ones.
Stole them.
Or stole them, yeah.
Yeah. It just intrigued me as to, you know, it seemed very strange to give people hardware that was unable, but not give them the software to operate the hardware.
Well, what you're forgetting is 2007, when the iPhone was first released, for a year, you had web apps, you had what Apple provided, and that was it. And people got along fine. I mean,
unless you jailbroke it, and that's when we started having that whole app experience from. I can't even remember what it was now. Zyphone? Is it one of the jailbreaks from them? Or?
Yeah, the phone.
Another interesting thing too is that some people don't realize is that the iTunes, you know, iTunes Store and the App Store and everything is actually available in more countries than any other platform.
Right.
Like Amazon is not as widely available by a long shot. Even the Google Play Store is not in every country.
Yeah.
Sure. So actually, that's true. The non-smartphone, the ignorant or slightly uneducated phones, has that enabled them to keep a hold in the part of the world where these smarter phones weren't available? I mean, is that now going to kill off them?
Yeah, it is.
Right. I think so.
I think that's what BlackBerry are finding, because they've still been pretty big in places like South America and China and things, and their market share has just been... Someone's just dug an enormous and massive hole and shoveled BlackBerry's market share. Yeah. And then everyone's just standing around on the grass going, nothing to see here.
Ah, BlackBerry 10 come January. It'll all change.
January what year?
And it'll all change for sure. We won't hear about the name BlackBerry anymore.
Apparently,
a girl can dream.
Apparently, BlackBerry 10 is looking rather swish.
I love the look of it. Beautiful piece of kit.
The 10's the software, isn't it? But the new BlackBerry it looks very iPhone-ish.
Lawsuit.
Don't make me cough. It looks really nice, I think. If that's the McCoy, I'm not sure whether that's a mock-up or whether it's the real thing. It's on CNET. BlackBerry 10L series. New photos reveal a heavy iPhone influence. Unquote.
What? No.
I don't see much.
There was a beautiful phone that I saw designed in Russia recently, which has got a touchscreen front and all the lovely dovey things we used to. But on the back, it had something akin to a Kindle. So it had whatever you call it, paper. I don't know what you call it now.
A backwriter.
E-ink. Yeah, so it had an e-ink screen on the back and an iPhone-esque looking screen on the front. And I thought, what a terrific idea! Use the back of the. So you've got two screens, one for, you know, reading books and all the things that you wouldn't necessarily want a Retina, you know, OLED screen for, because we all know that e-ink's a more pleasant reading experience. And this one phone seemed to have both ends. It's designed in Russia, and I think it's due for release next year or something.
I think I know what you're talking about, Alex. Wasn't that a add-on thing to give the iPhone a second screen? You just plug it into the bottom. And then you turn around on the back, and it's an additional screen.
I seen this like 2 weeks ago. I read earlier in the week, and I thought, well, that's a lovely idea, but I didn't think I'd be doing any shows that would mean I'd need to remember it. But I think it was actually a phone that, you know, looked a bit more like the iPhone 5 with, you know, a bigger screen. But actually, the flip side of it was e-ink. which I thought was a really nice idea.
Kelly provided us a link. And yes, it's a phone.
The Yota phone, yes.
Yota, not Yoda. That was already taken. Copyright.
DMCA takedown, Jesus. Even just thinking it.
Wish I hadn't said it, because everyone's now reading that. I'm not talking about Apple. Right.
The consumers have been polled by someone. I can't see the thing there. Neil Hughes writes in Apple Insider, and he says that 47% of consumers would be interested in Apple TV, and they'd be willing to pay 20% over the odds for current TV sets in order to get it. I think that may be a little... If there really is an Apple TV coming, 20% may be a little bit under-ambitious. Right, Carl, let's start with you, because you were the one that kind of... You've been giving us hints and tips on content and stuff like that, and devices, little breadcrumbs have been coming through. What do you have any latest news for us on whether Apple TV is coming at all?
No.
Right. So,
honestly,
no.
When you start hearing about that they've actually got some content deals done, that's when the TV's coming. Because until then, they ain't got crap to put on the TV.
Well, you talked about last year about the iLive or iPass thing.
iLive is like for pay-per-views and basically, from what my understanding is, it's like an app experience, but that's the channel, and you can have live content, on-demand content, sporting events. But Hollywood is not on board with this, just like they're never on board with anything. And it takes them forever and a year before they go, that might work, you know. And then by then, people have already said, I found that on a torrent. So eventually they'll get with the program.
Don't make Kelly pee your pants, please.
Okay.
I just love, that's an awesome voice, and it's cracking me up, that's all. It's the same problem with everything. We've had the same evolution. We've already seen this happen in music. And it's happened in music a few times. Oh, God, the radio. What'll we do, George, about the radio? Because old white dudes can't make money off the radio, right? Wrong. Now that they've figured out, finally, how to make money off the radio, a little dude named Sean Fanning here in California basically killed the radio. And Apple helped bring back making money with the iPod, which you guys probably don't remember very well. I was actually working for a digital music company when Napster was released in 2000. And that was special. And the problem becomes old white dudes can't figure out how to make money from something that they don't quite understand. And with technology, that's like all we see is there are good ways to make money off of this. There are good ways to make money off of this. And if you need any proof that Hollywood is run by people who don't get it, here is your proof. If you buy a Blu-ray disc in the United States, there's like four studios or something that actually release DVDs at like major studios, and two or three of them, it's at least half of the companies that release DVDs on release stuff on Blu-ray. You bring it home, you put it in your DVD player, and you have an unskippable ad for Blu-ray.
Hmm?
Play that back. There you go.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah. I just bought a Blu-ray disc, and now you're going to make me sit through a 2-minute commercial to tell me how awesome is the thing that I just bought? Yeah, that makes me really not interested in giving you any more money. This is the problem we have here, and this is why the content deal is going to be a problem. It's ridiculous, and it's going to continue to be ridiculous, and it's going to continue to be ridiculous until people can work out the rights for Amazon Video on Demand, for example, because the rights for the Amazon Video on Demand app on the iPad do not let me AirPlay it to my Apple TV, because that's a different device, and Amazon Video doesn't have rights on that device.
No, I mean, the thing that Tone's pointing out in the chat room, he says, it's like the anti-piracy ads in the cinema. And I don't think it is, because the anti-piracy ads that were in the cinema are valid because you've got someone who's going to steal the content at the cinema. What really pissed me off was the anti-piracy ads that were on the DVDs that you've just bought or the Blu-rays that you just bought. And you'd sit there and go, stealing is a crime. Federation against copy theft. What? I just bought 15, paid 18 quid for this thing over the odds. And now you're giving me A, trailers I don't want trailers. I don't give me trailers on something I just paid for. Give me trailers as an option, as a click on the remote. Don't make me watch a trailer. And secondly, right. Don't preach me about Federation, about copyright theft, because I didn't steal it.
I can't remember which. There's a record label here in the States, and I can't remember which one it is, but they put these giant FBI anti-piracy warnings all over on the CD itself, on the back cover, on the front cover, in the liner notes. It's like, I mean, look, come on. There's hardly anybody buying CDs anymore, and now I'm getting I'm treated like a criminal, and I'm the one buying the CDs.
Yeah, because only criminals buy CDs to rip.
Yeah.
They make cassette tapes out of them. That's what they do.
Yeah.
I love cassette tape.
They make 8-tracks. So,
tracks, yeah.
I don't disbelieve that at some point there was an Apple, on the Apple campus, there was a TV that had an Apple TV built into it.
Or two.
Or more or five. Today.
Absolutely. Yeah. But as a commercial product, I've got to say, I really doubt now that there would be an Apple TV. Firstly, I agree with Kyle, the content deal is one of them that's going to hold it up. Hollywood is going to crucify it and it's going to be pointless and it'll die on that basis. But I think it's going to die as a product anyway. I just don't see Apple getting into that market anymore. While there was a buzz a little while ago, yes, maybe. But I think the other thing as well is that while that roller coaster or that wave was at the peak and if they'd have released something then there'd have been a lot of buzz, they'd have sold a lot of them. I think now people are going to sit there and go, yeah, okay. We said it was coming. We knew it was coming. We got excited about it. Now I'm not excited about it because it's here and it's just a really expensive television in the end. That's
when Apple will release it. When we all forgot about it, we're not excited about it anymore. Then all of a sudden we'll be like, oh my God, I'm excited. When do I get a second mortgage?
I don't know if we will.
But I would be more excited if they just stopped treating the current Hockey Puck Apple TV like a hobby. Turn that into a serious device. And then at that point, people will probably start paying attention. Because I would way rather buy the little $99 puck and keep that updated and swap it around if I need to take it to a different television or whatever. Like, we're moving. And so the TV that the Apple TV is hooked to now may not be the TV it continues to be hooked up to. So I may want to put it somewhere else. And I am gladly going to continue to fork over $99 to make sure each of my TVs has an Apple TV a lot sooner than I'm going to go buy a television set that Apple made.
I agree entirely. I would pay $99 for the Apple TV every day. Not every day, but, you know, as an item, I would rather pay that for it. And I would pay you another $99 to get rid of the frigging front row interface for the movies and give me wraparound scrolling, you bastards.
I think there's a big difference between TV and everything else Apple have come to play with. There is lots of models making lots of money out of TV stuff and films and etc. at the moment, which are working. It's not something that needs fixing at the moment. It's something that will evolve, I'm sure. But at the moment, there's plenty of places to to get movies, to watch streaming this and streaming that and all the rest. So it's not like they need to step in and fix something. And also the actual hardware of TVs, some of those, say, new Samsung smart TV things are mind-blowing incredible. They are the Apple equivalent of a desktop over a Windows machine at the moment. Mm. They are mind-blowing. And I'm not sure Apple have got the know-how at the moment to do something akin to blowing our minds compared to what's already there. And they're not going to put out something that's just as good as something else. It's got to be revolutionary and it's got to be mind-blowing. And I think revolutionary and mind-blowing, Samsung have got it nailed down at the moment. Used to be Bang & Olufsen, now it's Samsung. And so I think they're just going to have to sit there and wait.
Their TVs look good as well.
Oh, they're beautiful. The upgradability of them is incredible. The software on them is brilliant.
But I think I think there's a deeper point into what you're saying is there's nothing that Apple can do that's going to make, like, it's not like they're going to be making better panels.
No, exactly.
You know what I mean? I mean, the innovation is not really in the fact that there's this panel, because everybody has that. The innovation is actually in the software. And that's what the Apple TV, the little $99 Apple TV does, is it gives you this special software interface. And that's something that Apple can continually update.
How manked off would you be if Apple had launched an actual Apple TV way back when we started going on about it in the podcast, and Kyle had his inside gen, and you'd rushed out and you'd spent $1,200 or 1,000 quid on your Apple TV, and then 6 months later Apple come out and say, now this Apple TV, this does actual 1080p.
Exactly.
Television versus new box. It's like, you can't do it. You can't do that on a television because people spend their money on a TV, and that's going to last.
It's a 7-year cycle for a TV, isn't it?
Yeah. Far too long for hardware to be nailed into.
Yeah, but well, I mean, if you buy a new...
It's recently shrunk to 7 years, I believe. It used to be with CRT televisions, with the tube sets, the big thick ones, it used to be a lot longer because the TV lasted a lot longer.
Sure, but you also got to remember with, say, a Mac, you can go out and buy... I mean, I'm always buying. It's the same as you. And if I buy a new Mac, you know there's another one coming out in 2 weeks, one day. It's the same with the iPad, everything. And I don't care that much because if you go and buy a Mac today, you can still put on the newest software. It can still upgradable. It might not be as thin or it might not be quite as pretty, but it will do virtually the same job as the new Mac. If you go and build a TV tomorrow that you upgrade for $1,200, as Dr. Happy Mac said, in a year's time, you are really going to annoy people because of the old TV is not going to be able to do what the new TV does. Whereas a Mac, you know, the Mac I'm on here is 4 years old and it can still run everything that's produced fine. You know, and I use fairly high-end equipment, but TV is not going to do that and you're going to get bad will all the way down.
A couple of points in the chat room here. Sorry to cut you off just a second there. We'll come back to you. Point from Tone. Tone says, so the problem is that Apple TV, you've already got TVs that have got Netflix, Love Film, and those kind of things on them. So the apps are already on there. So you're going to say, well, why do I need to buy another device? So that could hurt Apple TV sales, as in the perk, as well. But I don't know how many people buy the Apple Puck TV for content. I think they buy it as a way of displaying stuff they already have. It's a sharing device of their existing content more than anything
else. To get
else.
Stuff from their iTunes.
Yeah.
Netflix and things like that are pretty dominant on Apple TV. Streaming is pretty important.
Hulu just came to it stateside, so...
So basically Apple...
Hulu...
Sorry, go ahead, Jason.
Apple's choice is to hit you for $1,200 for a television every couple of years and really, really annoy you, or leave the television out and sell you a $99 Apple TV Puck once a year for 10 years and make the same amount of money, and you still love them for it.
Do you think that Apple... Matt Jim in the chat room was asking the question, does the panel think that the Apple TV would actually be a computer with a TV tuner built in?
And they wouldn't sell as many computers.
No, you'd sell an iMac, 27-inch iMac, but instead of selling the standard 27th-inch iMac, there'd be an option to buy one with a TV tuner in it and an integrated Apple TV.
You can now. You know, you can plug in a USB TV tuner. They're not...
No. I'm talking about Apple will sell you a 27-inch iMac, and you can buy one with an integrated TV tuner. There's not a lot of space in the case left over, it has to be said.
Yeah. But also, 27-inch is too small.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to buy a TV that size.
Oh, I don't know. Anymore. There's some stupid people out there, trust me.
Yeah, not now. What I would.
I'd buy two of them.
40-inch TV for like $125.
Yeah. Well, when you buy your two, I'm going to wait 3 weeks and buy the new version.
Does anyone want the TV tuner card from a Performer 6 320 then?
Oh. Honestly,
I think the thing we all keep saying that $1,200 thing here, a $1,500 thing here, and upgrading it once a year. I'll look at one thing. A lot of people upgrade their iMacs every year. That's $1,200. But I think we're way over the top here of what a TV is going to cost. I think it's going to be between that $700 to $800 range. We were all kind of blown away. I remember when the iPad came out at $499. It was just like, oh, that can't be. It's an Apple product. It was $499. I think if they do release a TV, they got to have that same wow factor with the price point. Because people have got to go, it's an Apple product. I've got this. I've got that. I can do this. And Apple's notorious for always taking the best tier, taking that there, getting rid of that there, making that a little prettier. And it's a better thing. The iPhone proved that. The iPads proved that. I mean, look at all the imitation tablets we had at CES that year before the iPad came out. And then the iPad came out and nobody even talks about those things much anymore. And I think you're looking at the same thing with the TV. Yeah, the Samsung TVs, they look fantastic. The screens are beautiful. But who in the hell all day wants to do martial arts in front of their TV just to move a cursor? That's not Apple's vision. And I think they'll take something like that and make it more consumer friendly, like they always do. And with a price point that they want it in every single living room.
But to do that, they need to make the screen, maybe not retina, but even on a decent Samsung 1080p screen, reading text is still quite a horrible experience. You know, if you use it to surf the web, it's not very pleasant. So the only thing Apple can do is up the resolution of the screen, and then you're way past your $700 screen. You know, you're talking about $1,200 for... I mean, what do they want for a screen for the Mac now? It's $800, $1,000, isn't it, if not more? So if you're talking about cheap. 32-inch minimum of that, you've really priced yourself out of the market.
Interesting. Story this week on Ars Technica that reflected something that was said on The Verge about the Office package coming to iOS. There's a suggestion that Office is going to be released on iOS and that it would be a bit of a mistake, unquote the article, that it should come to the iOS platform. In bringing Office to iOS, is Microsoft playing a dangerous game, says Peter Bright. Chris, have you read this one? Talk us through.
Yeah, Peter's basic thesis here is that, you know, that Office compatibility, you know, the native Office compatibility, it's one of the marquee features for both Windows Phone and for, you know, Windows tablets. Surface. Yeah, there's Surface RT and everything. It's you've got basically, you know, a usable, compatible version of Office right there on your device, whether it's the tablet or the phone. And that is right now really a really compelling, you know, what we might call in the past a killer feature. Like, if someone's going to choose a Windows phone over an iPhone, this is going to be one of the reasons why. So if Microsoft does release a series of Office apps for, you know, the iPad, why would anyone? And they're not really even selling that well now. Why would anyone buy a Windows tablet if you can get Office on an iPad?
Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't a kind of maybe they will, maybe they won't. There's strong suggestions from an article on, I think it was The Verge, saying this is definitely coming. There is no doubt about this. Microsoft see this as a platform that they have to be on, regardless of whether it damages any sales on their own Windows RT or the search.
You know, what he's thinking is, what might actually save Microsoft is that Apple is apparently balking. You know, Microsoft wants to be able to offer subscriptions to its Office 365. So it's trying to change Office into this, like, subscription model, right, where you get the software and then you subscribe to this Office 365 service and you do all the stuff in the cloud.
And how well is that working for Adobe?
I don't know. I just subscribed to Creative Cloud last week. It's pretty awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you're the first person I know who uses it, who has said something good about it. There's a lot of smack talk from people who haven't actually tried it, but...
Oh, but, sure. I'm sure there's a lot of smack talk from people who don't use it. It's great for me because I pay a fixed amount every month. I can deduct it from my expenses, you know, for my taxes at the end of the year, for one thing. I always get the absolute latest version of whatever software I need. And even though I tend to use the basic, you know, Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, and I also have access to Lightroom, you know, if I bought those separately and I upgraded every couple of years, in fact, it would probably work out about the same, maybe, of money. But the amount that I pay per month is so small, it's an amount that I know I can meet every month. I don't know if I can, you know, I don't have $1,600 to buy Creative Suite 6 right now.
Sure.
But I have $29.99 today. And I'll have $29.99 next month. So that's one benefit for me, is that, you know, if you don't have a lot of money to drop on the full software now, I mean, if you just use Photoshop, it's probably more cost effective to buy it outright and then upgrade it, you know, every 18 months or whenever Adobe releases it. Another side benefit that, and the reason why I ended up doing it recently, is that Adobe offers all these feature upgrades to Creative Cloud subscribers, that if you just buy the software and wait for their usual, you know, point update releases, you might wait forever, or you might have to wait till the next version of Photoshop to get these new features. And I could get them right away as part of my subscription. So that was the reason for me that I thought it was good. And, you know, but every software company is trying to move to this kind of subscription based feature, because it's like guaranteed revenue. You know, if someone gets a version of Office with their computer or whatever, they might never buy another version of Office. They might just keep using that and keep using it until they get a new computer 5 years later, when, you know, they can't figure out how to get the viruses off or whatever. You know, so most software companies are trying to move to this subscription model where they iterate more often and people subscribe to get those, you know, updates. And then they can more, you know, it's just like with mobile phones. I mean, they want you to subscribe and pay a fixed amount every month.
But so, you know, Microsoft's not a software firm, is it? Not a hardware firm. It's a software firm. So,
yeah.
Right.
So, you know, this right. idea of subscription modeling, as you're saying there with Office, if you buy an Office, you buy an Office, full stop. And that's what they'll make more on Office than they ever will on a tablet.
Right. The other side of that is, you know, is Microsoft is trying to also be a hardware company.
I don't know if it is.
Then explain the Surface in any other terms.
Hang on.
Well, and the Xbox.
Don't tell me that a company that makes a piece of hardware is trying to be a hardware company. That's not. It's not shifting its business model. It makes software.
No, I think they're trying to do what they did with the Xbox, where it's the razor handle. You know, if I take a hit on the Xbox, I can sell you Halo games till the end of time.
Yeah, no, I think if you look at the Xbox, I know it's fantastically profitable for them as a business. But I don't think they... I would still never describe them as a hardware firm just because they made the Xbox. They're still a software firm.
Primarily, overall, yes. When it comes to tablets, when it comes to... You know, they're trying to be a hardware company because, let's face it, doing the Windows OEM model that worked on the desktop wasn't working on tablets.
Yeah, I mean, Jim in the chat room saying Microsoft are moving into hardware. I think they're dabbling in hardware, and that's as far as it's gone. That's as far as it will go.
I think they are moving into hardware. I think they're starting to see a business where software is not their game anymore, and they're looking at their competitors and realizing it is kind of in the hardware now. People like how the looks of a device, how it looks, and they have to move that direction. If not, they're going to be the company that we remember back in 1995 and XP, and that's about it.
It's even simpler than that. Apple makes the hardware, and Apple controls the software experience upon that hardware. That has been the Achilles heel of Windows forever, is everyone else being allowed whatever level of shenanigans they get their hands on before you buy the computer. So if I buy an HP that's running Windows 7, I get a very different experience than if I buy a Toshiba, Dell, Lenovo, anybody else, laptop, you know, a Gateway. Every one of those is a different experience, and you sort of have to learn your way around the exact same operating system because they all get to wrap their little wrapper around it. And I think maybe Microsoft is finally seeing that, gosh, you know, Apple really was onto something by controlling the hardware side tightly and controlling the software side pretty tightly. And as long as we control the tablet, we don't have the problems we have with Windows. I think it's twofold. I think it's that, and I think it's the same, the razor blade handle. The Kindle Fire is for people who are into Amazon. The iPad is for people who are into Apple. The Nexus 7 is for people who are into Google. And I think Microsoft wants to be mentioned in that sentence with those other companies.
I think there's a fundamental difference, though, because we're talking about Office. I'm probably going to get shot down here, but Apple do not make a decent piece of Office suite. It's rubbish.
I like Pages.
Sorry?
I love Pages.
Well, I've tried, okay? I've got Pages. I bought the new... Every time they bring out an update, I think, right, I've got to get the update because that's going to make it what I want it to be, and it never is. Microsoft Office, I mean, people will slag it off because it's such a big piece of kit that does a lot of things, but fundamentally, since it launched, I hate to think how long ago, 20 years ago, whatever it's been, it has been the stalwart of running an office environment, writing your letters, doing your stuff, doing your presentations, doing your spreadsheets and everything, and that's what it is. On the iPad the other day, I bought Pages because I wanted to write a letter, and I really didn't like it, and I was sitting there thinking, you know what, it goes against the grain, but if Microsoft did Office for this, I would buy it, because it just, to me, as somebody that's, you know, worked in and around offices since college days and all the rest of it, I like the layout, I like the way it works, and I really wish Microsoft would bring it to it. And I think Microsoft's thinking is there is nothing else like Office available for the iPad. And there's nothing as good as Office available for the iPad. So let's try and get Office on the iPad. I just don't think Apple know how to do Office software.
I'll go one step further than that. And I think it's also more about you're seeing iPads in the workplace a lot now. A lot. It is in the business sector now. Something Apple has not dabbled in as much, except maybe if it's customizing apps for, you know, for certain companies. But other than that, no, not your general workforce. Go download it. Do your presentations. These kind of things. I think that's one reason why Microsoft, again, going back to the roots of a software company, wants to be on that platform of the iPad, because it is starting to become the business model now. It is not about that stagnant computer that sits at the desk and the guy sits at the desk all day long and runs Windows applications. It's on the move now. It's the new world. It's the tablet era. I don't even think it's so much the laptops anymore.
Interesting. I'm not sure I agree yet. We'll talk more.
You will.
Next week. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. They're fantastic. We love them to bits. You've got to support them, because if we don't support them, we go away. They kick all the bandwidth for us every month, and you guys are buying shed loads of UK2 service. They're really happy that they sponsor us. They're more than paying for us through the things that you buy. So, you know, you're kind of giving that donation, if you like, to the network indirectly. Please use our offer codes. Please go to britishtechnetwork.com and click on the sponsors link and put them up. And then please, please, please buy your service from UK2. There's some fantastic deals in there, and we've got offer codes that will get your money off even further. So give them support. They're absolutely brilliant. And while you're there at britishtechnetwork.com, remember to vote for us, because the Mac Show, this very show, finished third last year. We were UK's third podcast, so we didn't do too bad. Even though we polled more votes than the other two, we still came third. We're up again. Mac, Big, Gamer, Media, iOS and Photo are all nominated for the European Podcast Awards. So whatever you do, please, please, please go along to britishtechnetwork.com and click on the Vote for BTN links and vote for us. Close your browser down, open it up again and vote again. Keep voting as many times. I want us to vote so much that it looks suspicious. Okay? That's how much we want to vote. Please do it. And also, you can donate to us as well. If you like the shows that we get, we rely on buying equipment and things like that, and it all comes out of my pocket. We don't ever take any money from anywhere else. So people that have donated, thank you very much. And all of the money that you donate goes to buying equipment for the office, buying new mics, those kind of things, as we slowly start to run out of them. All of this kit is getting on for 4 years old now, so it needs replacing at some point.
And also the bamboo for the panda bears also that goes there. Right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Have we got any cool things then? Mr. Forsman, start us off.
Cool thing, yes. Here we go. Let me pop this out of this little guy here. But I know a lot of our fans also on the photo show probably recognize
Joby.
The Joby GorillaPod. It's a little mini one, right? And they have a little set now for smartphones, and it comes with this cool little guy. I can get it out of the package. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this little thing doesn't look like much, right? But you fold it open, and it's spring-loaded, and you can hook it on to any smartphone. This is the iPhone 5 here. And I've also got a giant LG Optimus G here. It'll also be on there if you've got a different smartphone.
Okay.
But why would you, really, when you think about it? But I digress. Now, the whole thing, and it's got a standard quarter 20 thread, so you can hook it onto any tripod if you like, or any kind of mounting stand, but it's really handy on the GorillaPod, because then you can, you know, pop it up just about anywhere, and the legs are flexible, and you can adjust the angle and wrap around things and things like that. But it's really good for even just shooting stills. You can do time lapse. There's a lot of apps for shooting time lapse photography, especially getting a nice steady video shot. It's really good for. I've noticed. I've been trying to do some video things with my iPhone. I've noticed that I can't hold it still to save my life.
Yeah, it's so pretty tough. True. Pricing. Joby GorillaPod's about $15, isn't it? For the little one.
I'm trying to remember. This is the grip tight stand set. So you get the thing and the tripod. Right. I think it's $30, I want to say.
Okay. Good pick. Like that. No worries at all. Excellent. Mr. Swagger. Come on, cheapy.
Yes. Oh, I wouldn't be in cheapy today. iPhone 5. That's my cool thingy. There you go.
Is that about 20 million pesetas or pesos?
Over here, it's about, I think, unlocked. I know. That's not even unlocked. Like, on if you want to get on prepaid over here, I think it's like 33,000, 34,000 pesos.
Oh, you must be a millionaire.
No, I got it on 2-year contract.
Okay.
Other than that, though, I would say my cool thingies, we were on Google Kick this week. Other than Maps, they have issued the YouTube app for iPad. Stunning. It looks great. It beats the hell out of the one that you used to. Oh, it's awesome. Go check it out.
I'm guessing that's free as well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's really, I mean, if the one that was on the original for the YouTube app was on Apple's products before, it was never that great. This thing is really, really cool. And they've also updated the Mail app too now, which also looks pretty slick on the iPad.
Yeah,
and the
I got Gmail app yesterday. It was very good.
Yeah.
Works
yeah.
very well.
But the YouTube is stunning.
Excellent.
It's really cool.
Good pick. Kelly G, what have you got for us? I'm guessing it was updated yesterday.
Yes. I have two picks this week. I'm going to go with the bonus pick first, which is Andy Iannocco's advent calendar, the Amazon advent calendar. He does one every year. It's really awesome. It always makes me laugh. There's always a wide enough variety of stuff that it's cool. And so I like it every year because you never know what you're going to get. Amazon also does some free MP3s during Christmas, so you can get some of those too, and that's pretty cool. And my other pick, if I can get my phone to cooperate with me, is... It's 1Password 4 for iOS.
Cool.
So it's new and improved. The browser is awesome. You can sync with iCloud. Your backup is done via iTunes. You can flag things as favorites. There's tons and tons of new stuff. You can go to blog.agilebits.com to read all the stuff that's new. It's $7.99 in the US App Store right now. That's the intro price, so that we can sort of try to give everybody an upgrade price. And then it will be $17.99 when it goes off sale. So
worth it.
You're better off to get it sooner than later.
You must declare an interest here, of course, though, that you do.
Yes, my day job is working for AgileBit Software in support. That's what I do the rest of the time when I'm not here. I am partial, but I was a customer before, and I have no problem... I would have no, if I were not working for AgileBits, I would have no problem paying for the upgrade. I've been beta testing for a while and it's really solid. It's nice to use. So many people wanted iCloud syncing. So many people wanted folders. We've made the backup easier. The browser's really slick. Those are all things that were really, really worthwhile improvements. And the new app is universal, like 1Password Pro was. So there'll be less confusion in the App Store as well. You can run it on both.
See, the rest of your, when you get to be a customer of a firm, they give you, like, discounts and that kind of stuff. They gave Kelly a job. Agile Bit Software. What a fool. Cool firm. Alex G. Fox, what have you got for us, buddy?
Right. Okay. I have got... I'm not going to give myself back. I have got the webcam that I'm using. I know it's been mentioned before by Sarah Gray on Big Show, but I bought one because of, quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of the built-in EyeSight camera. And I bought the Logitech C920 webcam. Now, it's supposedly not Mac compatible because the 910 is the one they say is Mac compatible.
That's what Kelly's on as well.
Okay. Yes. It is Mac compatible. E920. What I particularly like about this is it does the H.264 conversion on board. So it's got the circuitry on board. So what it sends down to the Mac has already been processed and it has already been shrunk down to minimal size. So the packets that go through Skype are much, much smaller. The computer isn't having to compress anything. It's pre-compressed. This is giving me 1080p through Skype, not the 720 that the normal webcam does.
Which is why at this end I've got no lip sync on you at all.
Okay. That's fine. But that's just my computer that happens to be...
It'd be great if you could do 600 by 800, please, mate, next week.
Right, we'll have to work out what button that is. But I really like this. I went to bought under Ewan's recommendation. It's an app called Webcam Settings because there is an issue between the... I can read it here. The power line frequency. In the UK, we're at 50 hertz, and this is made for America, which is 60 hertz. And this takes away all the flicker, which you will get. Ewan suffers from it as well in the studio.
I do.
But it is an amazing bit of kit. What I would say is be very careful about one thing. When you look on Amazon, you've got some people, including Amazon themselves, that sell something called the Logitech C920 HD Webcam. So they called it the HD Webcam Pro. It doesn't exist. What they do is, that is the full price version. I think it's £89.99. The Logitech C920 HD Webcam, which is what it actually is, they are also selling for £57.99. It is exactly the same thing. It's the same box, it's the same camera. Logitech don't make two versions. But what they've done, they want to discount it to sell it. So they call it the HD without putting the Pro on it, and they sell it to you for £57.99. And if they sell you the one with the Pro on it, and it is literally just what they put on the website. The box that came to me says Logitech C920 HD Pro Webcam. It is the Pro webcam. There is only one, but I paid £57.99 and not £87.99. So please bear in mind, save yourself all that money. It is exactly the same machine. There is no difference whatsoever.
It's a good camera. We like the Logitech stuff. The 910, 920s are very good.
It's working with iMovie. It's working with Final Cut. It's working with everything. All the things they said.
The 910 doesn't.
Yes. I put on eyeglasses. I put on the demo version, which I then deleted. But whatever eyeglasses puts on your machine makes the iMovie and the Final Cut recognize it. I then felt guilty and went and bought eyeglasses because it's a nice little bit of software anyway. But just download the demo and don't use it, but it does what it needs to do to make Apple recognize the camera for its other software. Just bear that in mind as well. So you don't actually have to pay for it.
Very quickly, real hot off the press news, iPad Mini is looking to outsell the Retina display iPad over Christmas. There's orders expected to hit 6 million iPad Minis over the Christmas period, which will double it to 12 million sales in the first quarter and pass it well past any of the iPad mains that they've ever been.
I think I said that a few weeks ago, didn't I? Ooh. I said I'll double it. Not surprised. It will be a hot Christmas item. Come January, Apple won't sell crap.
Mine was a hot November item.
When were you going to get yours, Carl? Next Christmas?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Tina's already got one.
Really?
Yeah, imported, she's got
personally.
One.
Yeah, she got it before us.
Yeah. Yeah, she got from my parents, actually. It's kind of a pre-Christmas gift, so.
You haven't, the Philippines hasn't got it then. It's just a, it's a bootleg.
No, but we are, yeah, it's bootlegged over here. We are getting it, though, very soon. I've seen from authorized retailers over here something. I think in the next couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, we're getting it here. Yeah, probably.
And finally, for the cool thing, DHM.
Freebie. It's designed to make your desktop more interactive and fun to be, and other things as well, is a free on the Mac App Store application called Geek Tool.
Right.
Which you can download for free, and it basically allows you to put little applets sprinkled around your desktop, like weather widgets and time widgets and photos and things that you do. If you take about 10-15 minutes to come to grips with what it can do in terms of overlaying images on top of each other with various transparency effects applied and things, you can get some pretty good effects there that make the whole desktop a living experience rather than just a photograph of your pet dog. Which is nice, and people have done sort of interactive, moving Star Trek-themed graphic interfaces for the desktop with all the information, what's playing in iTunes, what the temperature is, all this stuff. It's interesting to play around with, and it makes the desktop a bit more of a lively place to be, and it's free, which is nice.
Excellent. Good pick.
There's a Flickr.
Take free.
Want some inspiration, you can go into Flickr. There's a whole... people post their Geek Tool built desktops on Flickr, so you can get a feel for what's possible with it, with a bit of sort of tweaking around. Good sounds stuff. Great.
No, excellent. Good pick. We like the flexibility.
Free stuff,
that,
good
definitely.
Stuff.
Yes, for sure.
Geek Tool is awesome. Yeah. I love it.
There you go. Recommendations all around. My cool thing is an app for your iPhone called UK Train Times. It's going to be absolutely subtle use if you're American, unless you're here on holiday, or Filipino. It's a really, really great application. It's not cheap. It's £4.99 to buy, but it gives you live routing of all trains. It's got live data on it for when trains are delayed and that kind of stuff. And I sussed out what trains to catch into the middle of London from East Grinstead and when the best train time was, when the last train home was, that kind of stuff. And you just type in your destination, your A to B, and there's a whole pile of other stuff on there as well. It's not just journey planning, but they'll give you live information too. £4.99, but it's fantastic. UK Train Times is the app by Agent Limited or Agent Limited. There we go.
Is that available like in other stores? Like say you're coming to the UK vacation, you can get it in the US store and have use it while you're there.
Have a look now while we wrap up. Tell me if it's in there.
Okay, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll just shut up and do that.
Thanks, mate. It's the first time we'll finish the podcast without any lip. Thanks everyone so much for joining us. We've got Christmas next week. It's a Christmas show. There'll be the Christmas quiz or something like that. We'll do something. Big show as well as Mac show. We'll have some fun. Andy and Natco is going to be on next week as well, so he'll be here for the Christmas show like he normally is. That'll be fun. Don should be back, and yeah, I don't know. We'll probably have about 10 people. I'll have to figure another 4 Macs up. Get it going. Run 10 Skype lines.
Yeah, I was going to say, put Skype to the test.
What's the word? Is it in there?
I don't see it.
You can do the shows via Google Hangout.
Yeah, we might have to. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Forsman?
Me?
Yes, toi.
Oh, you can get me at arstechnica.com, as usual, or on Twitter at Forsmac.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Mr. Swagger?
Find me on Twitter at Kyle Swagger.
Cheers,
simplest.
Mate. Excellent. Ms. Kelly.
You can find me on Twitter as Verso.
Right. Not doing any podcasts this week then?
No, I probably am. I'll probably be on the Tua Talkcast. I didn't do Tua TV Live this week. I was on Angry Mac Bastards last week. I'll probably be back again.
Good.
You can hear me here and there.
Totally good. Alex G.
Alex G. Fox on Twitter.
Thank you, mate.
And finally, .com.
DHM.
I've got that as well, but I never announced that.
Apparently, Kelly can get UK train times. I don't know why she's put it in the chat room and not just bloody said it. I've no idea.
Yeah.
But Kelly says she can get UK train times as an app.
I looked here and I searched UK train times and it showed it to me in iTunes.
What's the price? What's the price?
Let me look.
$25.
All the money. $6.99 here.
That means you get it cheaper than me.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
Finally, something good for American tourists.
Slightly less useful for Kelly, though.
Yeah, I can't do as much with it as you can.
And talking of slightly less useful, DHM, where can we get you, mate?
At Dr. Happy Mac on Twitter. If you can find me, maybe you can hire me.
If there's a problem that no one else can fix, you can call him.
Call Dr. Happy Mac, maybe.
He's got a hammer. We'll be back again next week. Christmas show and everything. See you then. Thanks for listening.
Happy holidays.
Bye. Does that mean you're not coming, Chris?
I don't know.
If you're saying yeah, happy holidays this week, you're not coming next week. No.
Screw you bastards.
I'm used to the media outro. I'm not saying anything that can be recorded until then.
I'm always saying something. Just piss you one off.
DHM?
Ah.
If I ask you a question, do you think you may be able to help me, though others can't?
Yeah, have you got my Bax details?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Hang on. I've got a question. I forgot the sudden question.
What
an arse. No.
I think that was a question. I thought it was a statement.
No.
Do you mean arse?
Arse. It's a question that was sent in for Don. I need to find it now.
But Don's not here.
Yeah, I'd
say no, Don's giving me an answer. Don's giving me an answer. The question was from someone...
Are you recording?
I'm still recording.
Edit this don't, later. Okay.
I'm not going to edit it. Jesus Christ.
Leave it all in, please.
Hi, Don. I was wondering if there's an easy way to switch my Screencast Online magazine subscription from my iPad to my iPad Mini. And Don's replied, because he knew he wasn't going to be here this week, I'm afraid there's a bit of bad news and some good news about transferring the issues on the iPad Mini. It transpires that there's a limitation in transferring previous issues of the Screencast Monthly magazine to another iPad. However, the MagCast developers are aware of this issue and have a fix in development. So hopefully it should be available sometime in January. Until then, please continue downloading the issues of the magazine using your members code, and Don will announce it when there's a new version of the magazine app available to download. The limitation is only for people using the Screencast Online membership code mechanism. People purchasing the mag via iTunes can restore to their other device using their Apple ID and it won't affect it. So there you go. Restore all purchases is what you need.
Thank you, Don.
Excellent.
You can go now. Cheers.
I don't want to.